On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Welcome to On the Bookshelf for Veterans Day weekend. Over the last 32 years, we have featured the stories of veterans of all sorts of wars in which Americans have fought. This year, we thought we'd do something a little different. We're going to find out what it was like to be among the African-American nurses who served at the Tuskegee Army Air Corps base. They were training in Tuskegee, Alabama. What were their jobs? What were the challenges they faced? What were the obstacles that they faced? We're going to learn about it from the daughter of one of these nurses, Pia Marie Winters Jordan. Her book is Memories of a Tuskegee Airman Nurse and Her Military Sisters from New South Books, an imprint of the University of Georgia Press. Pia is the project director of the Tuskegee Army Nurses Project and continues to work on a multimedia documentary on the Army Nurse Corps members who served with the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II. She retired as an associate professor in the School of Global Journalism and Communication at Morgan State University in Baltimore in 2018 and lives in St. Petersburg, Florida. Her mother was one of those angels of mercy. Thank you so much for being with us on the Bookshelf.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dave, for having me. I mean, I really feel honored, especially since your radio station reaches out to the people in Tuskegee, Alabama.
We're very proud of Tuskegee Institute and all of the things that have been done in Tuskegee through the years, not the least of which are the Tuskegee Airmen. But this is the first time I even thought about the idea that, of course, there would have to be nurses on the base. Of course, there would have to be doctors on the base because people are going to get injured. Your mom and these other nurses had to handle in these situations.
Right, and see, it wasn't just the men. It was all the support staff who were on the base, their families. So you even had birth. There was a women's section and a birth section there. So it was like, it was a little town.
Yeah.
Within a town.
So these nurses, certainly they had to know about emergency, more routine medical. From reading your book, I learned that there were some that became interested or trained in all sorts of other things, including counseling and so forth. Your mom was one of those.
What happened is, as I hear from other children of Tuskegee Airmen and Tuskegee Airmen nurses, growing up, they were just mom and dad. You know, if they did anything of historical value, it kind of went over our heads. As far as my mother, and then some of the others, they say parents never talk much about it. And so I don't know if it was because maybe of disinterest or from the family members or because it had been such a painful period in history because of the Jim Crow laws. So I was, after I went from working in broadcast television then into teaching multimedia journalism, I had gone through some of my mother's things because she'd become ill, and I was her only child. And as I was going through her things, I found this scrapbook, and it was blue, and it had these airplanes on it, these raised airplanes, and on the top of it, it said Tuskegee Army Flying School. And so when I opened up the book, I'm going, oh my goodness, my mother was there with the Tuskegee Airmen. And I'm seeing all these pictures from, you know, group pictures and pictures of airmen. And so I was telling one of my new colleagues that I just met that I was so sorry I had never done anything about them. And she said, well, why don't you start now? And that was in 2009. And so I started, she said, you got to interview them. So I went from basically the West Coast, the East Coast, finding airmen who knew them and finding the nurses, those who I could find who were still alive. Unfortunately, I believe everyone I interviewed at that time is now dead.
Hmm.
I got some interesting stories, and I finally got more of a realization of what they had gone through and who they actually were. Because keep in mind, because the military was segregated, instead of black men just going to an air base somewhere, because this is the Army Air Corps, and just working, you know, with other, you know, white pilot trainees, the Army Air built an entire base in Tuskegee, Alabama, of all places. But I understand why they built it there, because Tuskegee Institute had a civilian air, I think it was the Civilian Air Patrol, there, and the weather was nice. So if you're going to train people to fly planes, it's good to be in an area where it's nice. So they were put there, but you're in a place where you're not very welcome. And so I started doing the research. Now, my research was basically, I was doing working on a video or audio documentary. I hadn't planned to do a book. But what happened is I decided to, you know, put together a book proposal, and I identified where I thought it might, you know, a company who had done, like, book about the Tuskegee Airmen in the past, and one where there was an intentionality about doing, you know, books that dealt with the South. So I found this book company, New South Books, and I did a book proposal. They were interested, so I had to write the book. I took about a year to write the book. In the meantime, after I wrote the book, they went under the umbrella of the University of Georgia Press, which I thought was a great thing because, you know, University of Georgia Press, you know, was a pretty big operation. So that's why I wrote the book. And next I'll have to do the documentary. But but right now it seems like I'm doing, like, interviews, like, with you and book signings. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, I'm coming back from a book signing. That's how it all happened.
It's fascinating to me because my wife's dad served in Europe during World War II. So she had a little bit of an idea of what it must have been like, but they didn't talk about it much either. I'm certainly not saying that their situations were the same, but I think it was that generation. They just kind of persevered and didn't complain much, even though they had much about which they could have easily complained. Your mom went to, no big surprise here, a segregated school, the St. Philip Nursing Program attached to St. Philip Hospital, which served black patients. And it's probably, for our younger listeners, they're probably flabbergasted that we're talking about that there were such things as places that could only have black doctors and black nurses, and places that could only have white doctors and white nurses, because they were not allowed to be mixed. And
yeah, one of the things you have to realize, St. Philip Hospital School of Nursing in Richmond, Virginia, where my mother went to nursing school, that was under the umbrella of the Medical College of Virginia, which is a white institution. And there were white institutions throughout the country who had separate programs for black nurses, because keep in mind, St. Philip Hospital in Richmond was black, so they needed, you know, Richmond was the capital of Virginia. You had black patients, and so you had to find someone who would, you know, take care of them. So that's what happened. The Medical College of Virginia was not the only one. I believe there were like 14 white institutions throughout the country who also provided nursing schools for African-American women. And actually, yeah, African-American women at that time, I know there were some men who may have come later to train, but that's where it stood at that time during the 1940s.
When we think of nurses in the World War II era, they're always women. And when we think of doctors, they're almost always men.
Right.
Your mom was one of a group of women who were the first nurses to be assigned to the Tuskegee Airmen base in Tuskegee, Alabama. And she was from a different part of the country. Was it difficult making the transition? I mean, was Jim Crow more in force, say, in Alabama than it was where she came from?
I believe those nurses, because there were a total of 28 that came through Tuskegee Army Flying School, and there were only like 20 nurses there at one time. Most of them were from the South, and she was from Virginia, near the North Carolina line.
Oh, that's right.
Line. So she would understand what was expected of a Southerner.
Gotcha.
During that time. Now, even one of the stories I mentioned, she was saying how hard it was that you'd go to the store and you'd have to get a sandwich or a drink and go to the back to get it. You couldn't go in the store. And, of course, definitely you couldn't go in the store and try on clothes.
Yeah,
see, and then, too, the book I talk about, you know, some of the children, the white children would throw stones at them white children were riding their buses home or to school, and my mother and her sisters and her brother, they would be walking, you know, so they had to try to stay out of the way of where buses may be going so that they would not get hurt. So, yeah, most of the nurses were from the South. There were a few of them from, just a couple of them from the Midwest, and the rest of them were more like in from New York. There's from Massachusetts. But most of them did come from the South, so they knew what to expect. The ones from the North, and I know I interviewed just one, her mother was concerned that her daughter was going to the South, and her daughter was an only child who was, like, outspoken, and she was afraid that she might get in trouble if she went South. Mm. But she made it okay. Difficult for all of them, the women and definitely the men who were being trained there in Tuskegee, Alabama.
Oh, yeah. We've talked before on this show about how the African-American pilots were treated, and they are young. They're young men, and they want to have fun and everything, and they were extremely restricted. There were problems that were not their fault that were exacerbated by the racial policies of the day. As they said, we're fighting a war at home for race, and we're fighting a war abroad for freedom. And
right.
And they did not fail to see the irony of it. Now,
right. They were calling it like double V. They were hoping they would have victory overseas in the war over in Europe, and then victory as far as segregation here in the United States, but it didn't happen right away.
Right. The service of so many African Americans during World War II was a major contributor to the success of the civil rights movement, because these were people that learned we can stand up to the Nazis, we can stand up to the Japanese, we can stand up to the Italians, we can stand up. We're not going to be set back before, because there were African Americans that fought in World War I who came back and the NAACP was founded and so forth, but they didn't get the support of the majority population when they started standing up for civil rights. In fact, it was brutally put down. So these,
right, that's true.
Your mom and her peers, these were kind of double pioneers in that regard.
Correct. But even when I was listening to, I think, a video of some of the Tuskegee Airmen, and when they were coming back, you know, they were thinking there was going to be, you know, like a lot of hoopla and parade for them. Well, when they got off the boat, they saw the white military men had got to go off on one, you know, one of the planks, and they went off of the other, and they didn't have any kind of celebration. And then many of them, when they went back home, it's like, well, you know, you were in the war, you were overseas, you know, remember where you are now, back home.
Yeah.
In the South. So it was still the same. They were still under the you know, Jim Crow rules. And another thing about Tuskegee, the Army Air Base, it only was there from 1941 to 46. So as the base was closing in 46, I know the nurses, they started to be transferred to another base in Ohio, which was in the north, so it was going to be a little different situation there. Yeah, the base was closed down, and actually, it's been in private hands. The actual Tuskegee Army base has been in private hands pretty much ever since. Where they have the National Historic Site, that was where there was like their primary. Before the base was built, where they had their primary training. But it's a few miles away from what was called Moton Field, which I understand was named after one of the presidents of Tuskegee, at that time Tuskegee Institute. But the actual Army Air Base was quite a distance away. But I've been on the base, which is owned by a family who have a like lumber business. You know, they plant trees. And actually, they had been trying to restore the property. They put up this beautiful, tall gate that said Tuskegee Army Flying School. And one of the owner's sons gave me a tour, like some of the sidewalks or some like signs. There was Lena Horne Way. That sign was still there.
Oh yes.
And it looked like, I mean, they may have painted it, you know, so you could really see it. The curbs were still there. There were some smokestacks, but it was just, you know, just driving past that area, because at the first time I drove by, there was no paved road. It was like, what do they call it, like the red clay?
Right.
And then I just got such a feeling, you know, a fear when I was went back by myself and started driving by. I just became so fearful, and I'm thinking, probably the men and women who work there, especially the African-American men and women who work there, that what kind of fear they must have been under, because pretty much they were in like a cocoon. They stayed, most of the time they stayed close to the base. They stayed on base, you know, for their activities,
sure.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, they had a movie theater on the base. There were recreational opportunities on the base. I guess the USO came through and provided. But pretty much, you know, you're in a cocoon, like, you know,
yeah.
You don't have the same sort of freedom that others might have on another base.
You know, I had not even thought about the fact that the base was closed after the war. So it's as though the government says, well, we need these flyers. It's a big war. Okay, fine, you can fight. But then when the war is over, well, okay, we don't need you guys anymore, so thanks so much, and we're closing your base. And
right.
Don't
and
expect there to be more of you.
And you're thinking, you know, you're thinking, I was in the military, I flew planes, you come home. And say, for instance, maybe the only job you can get is as a janitor. Or if you try to say, well, I can fly a commercial plane, that might not be happening all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then you might be, even if you're not an airplane pilot, you might come home and, you know, people, you may end up getting, and I'm sure, I believe I've read where some of the soldiers were killed. You know, you came home thinking that things were different, and you'd have an experience over in Europe where you had been fighting, but you came home and that's not what you experienced. Of course, your family, your community, we're very proud of you. And I noticed when I went back to my mother's church in Virginia, it's in Crewe, Virginia, but that's the Presbyterian Church. They have a plaque of all the military people who were in the military during World War II. And my mother's name is on there. Her brother's name is on there because he was in the Army.
Okay.
He fought in the Army and during World War II and Korea. So, sense of pride, you came back home and, you know, the community recognized you and your family recognized you, but anybody else in the community may not have thought that you were, you know, that much.
Right. You identify the group that came as the Caped 13. These are the first nurses stationed at Tuskegee Army Flying School Station Hospital.
Right. Yeah, there was a total of 28 nurses who were stationed at Tuskegee Army Flying School. The first 12, 13 who arrived, which is funny, three of them also graduated from the same nursing school that my mother graduated from. They were all different years.
Wow.
And I believe she knew two of them because one graduated in 1936, which I'm sure she didn't know beforehand. But the other two, one graduated in 1940, the other one in 1941, and my mother graduated in 1942. So, and I remember her stating, because they all went by their last names. I remember hearing my mother on the phone talking about this certain person. And I said, oh, goodness, that was one of the ones who would have graduated. I think she would have graduated in 1940. So my mother was there with at least two of the other nurses. But the thing is, the first group, some of them came from Fort Bragg in North Carolina to come to Tuskegee. Another group was from Louisiana. And actually, one of my mother's dear friends, who was married to one of the first Tuskegee Airmen to graduate, because there were five of them, and she was married to one of them. She brought a group of nurses from another camp in Louisiana. Pretty much, you know, the base was just being built in 1941. The nurses arrived in 1942. They were really sort of pioneers themselves, and their principal chief nurse is the one who got it all started, because no black women were allowed in the Army Nurse Corps. The American Red Cross was the recruiting arm of the Army Nurse Corps, and they didn't allow black women in. However, this one nurse, her name is Della Rainey, and she was their principal chief nurse. She wrote to someone in the American Red Cross, explained how she wanted to do something for her country. Next thing you know, she got her Red Cross card, which enabled her to go into the Army Nurse Corps. So she was the very first African-American woman in the Army Nurse Corps. She was initially stationed in Fort Bragg, And she became the first African-American nurse who was a chief nurse. So she became their chief nurse, Della Rainey. And if you read, if you go to like an Army military site, the U.S. Army military site, her picture and her story will be there. So she's the one who started it all. So the 13 other women, they either came there, because 1942, that's when they arrived in Tuskegee. So the first group, they were from the two bases, the first 13. They were from the two bases. So they were the originals. They were there the whole time from 42 until 46. But, you know, some of the nurses didn't stay in the military after Tuskegee. My mother remained in the military for 10 years. But like I said, they went to, I believe that's pronounced Lockbourne Air Force Base in Columbus, Ohio, which is now called, if I'm pronouncing it right, a Rickenbacker Air Base in Columbus, Ohio. So that was my mother's second station, and that was up north.
Right.
So one of the nurses she met, who is still living, I think she's the only one who is living from that period. So it'll be 103 in recent, I think this month.
Wow.
She, and we're, I have to, you know, we're doing this in September, so she, I think her birthday's in September or something like that. She was, I read somewhere where she was saying that she's glad that she had not had to work in the South, although her brother was a Tuskegee Airman and he had been killed, I believe, overseas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the nurses, those nurses who had that experience in the South, it would have been from 42 to 46.
Wow.
And actually, in the book, it talks about how one nurse, he may have been, and it depends on who's telling the story, may have been beaten because she did not get off a bus when a bus driver in Montgomery, Alabama, where she was shopping, asked her to get off the bus because I guess she'd walked on. And then she's like just thinking, "Hey, I'm a military nurse. You know, I'm serving my country, and then you're treating me like this." So that was one of the stories, and there are probably a lot of other stories where there were such indignities that the men and women had to experience while they were in the Deep South.
That's one of the shameful aspects of how they were treated, how the airmen were treated, how African Americans were treated across the country. And I think that makes their sacrifice even more noble, because they knew they were not going to get parades or anything else. And they certainly weren't going to get rich. I think you mentioned in here that the starting pay for a second lieutenant was $1,800 a year. And I can't help but think that even in 1942 and 43, $1,800 would probably not go very far.
But keep in mind, too, you know how the military didn't look that kindly on women anyway, and it wouldn't have been just the black women, but the white women also had to deal with sexism.
Sure.
So, yeah, so, and that's one of the reasons why the nurses had to become officers, that the military made them officers, because the enlisted men who they trained to help, like in the hospitals, they weren't, it was going to be hard for them to listen to any women, especially because they had rank. That gave them a little more power into, you know, asking the men to do such and such and such and such, which they might not have had. And this has resulted after World War One, that the nurses were given rank like that, so that they would be looked upon, you know, more favorably.
Right. They'd be officers, and they could say to a pilot, say, because in the Navy, you have to be an officer to fly, but in the Army, Air Corps at the time, you did not. So you could be a sergeant and be a pilot or a navigator. And
actually, yeah, they didn't have any rank when they were learning to fly. And
right.
Once they got, they would get a second lieutenant once they finished.
Once they were commissioned. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So these guys, they have no rank. They're just cadets at this point.
Right. And so the nurse, they got to salute the nurses, and they can't be cavorting with the nurses. So I have some great stories. You know, the people will just have to get my book.
Yes.
Because there's some great stories. And when I tell the other people about it who haven't read the book, they're going, you know, they never thought about, oh, there being nurses on, oh, nurses who were commissioned officers, and the stories about the airmen who were college cadets who were like teenagers or maybe 20, 21, and these were nurses, you know, professional nurses. They had graduated from nursing school. They were registered nurses.
Right.
You had to be an RN to be in the Army Nurse Corps. So here you got these men who are, they're so young, and then you see these professional women, and for some of them, and you have to read the book to get the rest, because I know you're running out of time.
Yes. It is it's loaded with great stories, and I really do appreciate, first of all, you taking on a project like this when your original intention was to do a documentary, which is more your orientation as a video journalist. It's quite a task to take on a book, and it's loaded with all kinds of wonderful photographs and great stories, and of perseverance and of figuring out their way in the world and being pioneers, which is not always the most comfortable thing. But these women, your mom and her peers, that's exactly what they were. They were figuring out a new way for people to be, and particularly African-American women, at a time when that was a double disadvantage.
Yes.
So they really quite remarkable. And thank you for sharing their stories with us.
Okay, and thank you so much for having me on. For Veterans Day, I appreciate, thank you all who are veterans for your service.
Amen to that. Our guest today, Pia Marie Winters Jordan, her book, Memories of a Tuskegee Airman Nurse and Her Military Sisters. It's from New South Books, which started off in Montgomery, Alabama. It's now an imprint of the University of Georgia Press. By the way, Pia, do you have a website people can go to
yes,
find out more?
Yes, I was hoping you would ask that. It's www.tuskegee, spelled T-U-S-K-E-D-E-E, Army Nurses, one word, .com. I-N-F-O. So that's the website. I try to let people know when I'm going to be doing a book signing, where I'm going to be next making a presentation. And this little biography is about the nurses. Before I even wrote the book, I put some of their biographies that I had up to that point on the website. So it has how you can get in contact with me. It has all that kind of information.
Excellent. Excellent. Was there anything you were expecting me to ask you or hoping that I would ask you that I did not do?
Oh, you're a good journalist, because that's the question I
always
The last question. You were coming out of Alabama, and that's the state in which all this was happening, and you would
right.
be aware of the kind of environment, you know, they would have been in.
Yeah.
So, no, I think you did a fine job, Dave.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, the great thing is when people send you a wonderful book and you get to read the book and then ask them questions about it, you'd have to be kind of bad at your job not to be able to get a really good interview. and particularly the great stories that are in this book, it really was delightful to read. And
oh, I know one question that you didn't ask me.
Okay.
Where can people find the book?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you go online, it's everywhere. Of course, Amazon. People always talk about Amazon. But you might go to your local bookstore. If they don't have it, you just order it. And this would be really great. You might go to your library and ask, you know, your library system, do you have the book? Which might mean if they don't, they'll get it.
That's the spirit. I think that's a wonderful idea. Pia, thank you so very much for joining us at En Route Home from a book signing in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks so much, and thanks for the great book.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
Oh, and have a safe drive home. Our thanks once again to Pia Marie Winters Jordan, the author of Memories of a Tuskegee Airman Nurse and Her Military Sisters from New South Book, an imprint of the University of Georgia Press. Again, her website, TuskegeeArmyNurses.info, I-N-F-O. Thanks for joining us for this very special Veterans Day weekend. We hope that you enjoyed a chance to learn what it was like to be someone who was stateside and yet serving in a vital role in the U.S. military during World War II, at a time when you were not always welcome for being a woman or for being African-American. These women made a difference, and they were pioneers. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and to all our veterans, thank you.